member of the Place to Be Nation family, visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. As we took a week off in between with the regular season starting up, I don't think a lot of really important things happened in that week in between as I introduced my co-host Adam Murray. Adam Murray, do you remember anything maybe somewhere between like November 4th and November like 11th that actually was important?
No, because the world didn't end, and I think I would have remembered that.
Anything NBA related that was important? Since we're going to be spending the whole episode talking about those things. So well, I hope something important happened.
People overreacted to the first game, and then second and third games happened, and now people have calmed down. And that's, you know, we've avoided sort of the hot take on everything, which, you know, everybody needs to have be the first opinion out. Doesn't matter, you know, whether you're right or wrong. I need to be the first to give my opinion, and my opinion matters. And
well, you know, it's one of those things where it's almost like, you know, it's funny because, you know, you're going through your own, you know, situation with this is that it's like an ultrasound. Is that like, you know, you don't all, if it's really early in the process, like you don't see the arms, you might not even see the face depending on the angle, but you see something there. You know, it's like, it's sort of, it's not rounding into form, but there's something round in the vicinity. So you could at least figure something out.
It looked like a burrito. It, you know, it was just this square. It's like, that's the head. That's like it's a burrito in a wrapper.
For people in the context that Adam and his wife are expecting. So, that's what the first ultrasound looked like. You're saying
it looked like a burrito, and you know the obvious. Oh, it's a jelly bean, and
but that'll be your favorite burrito in the universe. You know, like it'll be the best burrito you ever had.
I don't plan on eating it, so I hope not.
Well, I mean, you know, you got the dynamic already having a child in the family, so that'll be interesting to see how that balances. Thankfully, but for me, I don't have to deal with that. You know, it'll be interesting to see how that works out. You know, it's like having two superstars on one team instead of one.
The funny thing is, it's like having the aging veteran and then the new star rookie comes in. The aging veteran was just worried about his toys being taken. He's like, well, I'm not going to share my toys. I'm like, but you're going to be 10 years older. The 3-year-olds and 13-year-olds aren't going to be playing the same things. He's like, you're right. I can keep all my toys.
Well, but based on this, like, if we actually put this in an NBA economic scale, would this mean that the newborn would get the max contract, and that means that the 8-year-old would automatically go down to maybe, like, $20 million or less per year?
Well, the 8-year-old's on the old scale money right now.
And if you're adopted, is that, like, the mid-level exception?
Oh, adopted, you went to the D-League. Maybe a stint in the Chinese league for a year.
We're not trying to offend anybody who's ever been adopted or was ever adopted a child. You know, it's a beautiful thing to do. But
it is a great thing, and they have now found a new home. It's, you know, they got Hassan Whiteside. Oh, you bounce around, all of a sudden you find a nice adoptive family, and all of a sudden
and you thrive.
You have a max contract, and everybody's happy.
Yeah. So, different strokes for different folks. And so we're going to be talking about, for the topic of this show, our overlying topic is for real or no big deal, where we just take on a series of different dilemmas, things that we've noticed in the league over the past week or two as the regular season has kicked off or tipped off. And we'll just try to figure out which ones might have some legitimacy and which ones might be a little bit of a mirage, you know, something that might not, you know, because I'm glad I have Adam here to sort of bounce it off, since Adam is Mr. Mellow, well, you're also a fan of Mellow, the real Mellow too, right?
I'm a huge fan.
You've always been a Carmelo Anthony apologist.
I am one of the few non-Knicks Mellow apologists, but Fab Mellow, very disappointed in. Mellow Trimble, very disappointed in. So I'm batting three.
He's not even played in the NBA, and you're already disappointed in Melo Trimble.
He tried so hard. He was
We're not gonna. I didn't have the Knicks in my cachet today. I mean, did you want to mention the Knicks at all? I mean, Porzingis has had some crazy good games. Derrick Rose has struggled. He averages less assists per game than Mason Plumlee.
Noah looks. Noah doesn't look healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. the Knicks are sort of we expected them to be. Is yeah, you're better than that horrible team you were, but ultimately you're still not that great. And then you watch them try to do the triangle plays, and they fail miserably at it. And it's just
defensively, they look terrible. Absolutely.
We're bringing in Kurt Rambis as our offensive coach or defense. It's like, well, that's not a good idea.
And this is what I found funny about that is that when he was with the Lakers coaching under Phil, I don't think he was the defensive coach. I think Brian Shaw was. He was more of like the offensive minded coach. So why is he coming in to coach the defense? Like I didn't understand.
He's the only one who knows knows the triangle, and he's the only one who still is supportive of it. I think
it's just very strange. I mean, is this a playoff team right now? Like do you see in the next 5 or 6 months the potential just kind of springing up?
Yeah, they're still a playoff team because there's a lot of teams out there that are just very Jekyll and Hyde-ish right now.
Very much so, especially in the West once you get past the Spurs. Like there's just some teams that even good teams like the Memphis Grizzlies and I'm talking about the West. You're obviously talking about the East, you know. But in the West, I've noticed that there's just a lot of teams that you just don't know. You like Oklahoma City, you know. Russell Westbrook gets on a roll, then they lose 4 games in a row, then they win 2 games in a row. Memphis, I just talked about. Another team that's out there that's not
Memphis,
played.
Utah.
Utah's been weird. I saw them on TNT lose to, I think it was the Bulls, in a really slow, ugly game. Even with Gordon Hayward back, Hayward's had some awful shooting nights. I know because he's on my fantasy team. So when my field goal percentage dips, I know it's because Gordon Hayward had a bad shooting night because nobody else on my team can shoot. and I'm thinking of some of the one that's a surprise we'll talk about a little bit later is the Lakers.
Little, oh, a little bit Lakers? Oh, yeah.
A little bit Laker. One. Yeah, I got Lakers on the brain. And then in the East, I mean, it looks like if you look at net rating and team stats I think you were wrong in the prediction pile about Charlotte. I think that's a legit team. Another one that I'm thinking of in the East that's got a little bit to be afraid about is the Indiana Pacers. You know, I mean, we're going to be talking about a lot of these teams over the next, 45 minutes or so. But, you know, is there anything that you've noticed out of the standings that really leaps out at you except for that muddled middle in the East?
I will defend my Charlotte Hornets.
Okay.
What stands out at me, well, one, I think we should be proud that we sort of pegged Houston as what they are. It's just really sort of a 500 middling team.
Mm-hmm,
their
mm-hmm.
records are a little – they're above 500 now by a couple games, but it's just – well, they're not – yeah, you're scoring 115, but you're giving up 115 as well.
But the one surprise with Houston is that they don't play as quickly as people think they do. Like in pace, they're actually like – they're in the top 10, of course, you know, with James Harden running the show, but they're not like the fastest. Like there's actually worser teams that are actually playing faster than even the Warriors. Like two of them that are the – like ahead in pace are actually the Brooklyn Nets and the Phoenix Suns. You know, I guess – adjusted pace, you know, picking it up is just kind of like the new thing for a lot of these bad teams that are just trying to scratch out points.
Yeah, but the only real shocker, and I think we could sort of agree, there's only one shocking storyline, is just how god-awful Washington is.
That's been very concerning. I believe they're right now 3-9, is that correct?
Yeah, and just
right around there. John Wall's played well. I can't blame this on John Wall. He's done okay. Marcin Gortat is rebounding, but outside of that, the one guy who's really played well, and I think the Washington Wizards might regret not trying to seal him up in the extension deadline, is Otto Porter Jr. Like they might wind up having to pay a little more than they could have had they just signed the extension before November 1st.
Yeah, and but the funny thing is we sort of all commended them that they, what do? They shored up their bench. They got some quality bench players, and then their bench has been non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one has sort of been a stinker.
Yeah, it's a lot of them have not worked out for them. Kelly Oubre has not really stepped up yet. you know, there's just been a lot of, you know, Trey Burke, we haven't really seen much from him either. You know, they've been forced to actually rely a little bit on their rookies, Sheldon McClellan, Daniel Achefu, because their bench has just not been able to pick up the pace. You know, it's just been very – it's a very concerning team. Scotty Brooks has not been able to do anything on defense for them. Their defense has just been awful. You know, they're worse than the Knicks almost.
Yeah.
But
you know, we said, you know, oh, they made a good trade, you know, trading out of last year's pick to get Morris, and – mm-hmm. Morris doesn't look like he sort of fits in the Scott Brooks system.
That's true. You know, he sort of fit when he got there under Randy Whitman, but with Brooks, you make a good point that Morris has not been the same as when he was post-trade deadline when he came into Washington when he played pretty well. So that is a little concerning. Let's go ahead and kind of jump in with some of these topics, and, you know, I'll shoot one at you, and then you can kind of ask for my answer. And it's just going to be yay or nay, for real or no big deal. You know, you can split the baby every now and then if you find a really good reason to justify it. But let's go ahead and go. The LA Clippers' defensive dominance over the league, for real or no big deal?
It's no big deal, I think.
Okay.
The Clippers, they have that subtle dominance. Like, you mm-hmm. don't really think. They don't, you know, it's not like the Warriors are like, yeah, we have no chance to get them. The Clippers are sort of like, they're ahead of you and they're beating you, but they don't look like they're not destroying you.
Well, their net rating is plus 13.8. It's four ahead of the runner up. You know, so they're blowing out teams when they get ahead. They're first in steals. They're 23rd in field goal attempts, which means they're not playing too fast. They're second in defensive rating behind the Atlanta Hawks.
Why. They're yeah. very methodical in their – they seem very on a mission and focused. It's not like the Warriors, like, we're going to get on a roll. Okay, now we're up 40. We're stopping everything. It's sort of like, yeah, just slow and steady. We're just going to continue pounding you and –
What do you think of Doc Rivers' decision to still not go with the stagger lineup, still go with the, you know, with the – it's almost like the death lineup, only, you know, the beauty of the death lineup in with the Golden State Warriors last year is that they didn't play it too often. It was like a secret weapon that they would just bust out at you in emergency situations, whereas with the Clippers – the Doc Rivers throws his death lineup of, you know, of Paul, Griffin, Jordan, Redick, and I believe maybe Mba Mute, and they just throw that at you right from the start, and they blow teams out in the first quarter. Like, do you think that that's – I know their bench has been up and down already this year, but up and down this year is better than the last 2 years, which when it was awful. So do you think that that could still work, or you think staggering the lineup might be a necessity?
I think, you know, they have sort of gone with, this is how we have to win. Our time is low. Why mess with this chemistry? Let's just take our death lineup and mm-hmm. let's work out all the imperfections, as opposed to, well, let's tinker with it. And then this piece might not work and this piece not might work. Everybody's going to have their role this year. Everybody's know what to do. Let's just, you know, sort of stay on point.
Is there anything different that you see out of the Clippers that's gotten them to this, you know, 11-2 record so far? Maybe, I mean, Chris Paul is super steady, but it's just the continuing, like perception of, well, Chris Paul's going to start falling apart, and he hasn't done it yet. I think that defensively, DeAndre Jordan being having an improvement as a center year to year has been a big part of that.
Well, we all expect Chris Paul to fade away, but and fall mm-hmm. off, but that's not going to happen in like 2 weeks. We're saying, okay, his contract is up next year. You sign him to a 5-year deal. Oh, you're going to regret that in about 3 years. Mm-hmm. The same way, like, you know, Steve Nash was the same way. Oh, he's going to fall off. Yeah, he ran for another good 3 years, and then it fell off.
Okay, let's talk about the team that's been the runner-up that has the runner-up standing right now in the Eastern Conference behind the Cleveland Cavaliers. Let's just get this out of the way, because we're not going to talk about them at all, really, this show, because they haven't really done anything terribly notable except for the big win over the Toronto Raptors, and then they sat LeBron, and they got blown out by the Pacers without LeBron playing. Cleveland Cavaliers, best team in the East?
By far.
Okay, well, let's just talk about, you know, two teams in the East, but I'm going to talk about the one who's the runner-up in the standings as we speak, the Atlanta Hawks. The second-best team in the East right now for the Atlanta Hawks.
Nay.
For real or no big deal?
Nay.
Nay?
Nay. Okay. It's a hard, hard
now, their
nay.
Stats across the board look excellent with Dwight Howard in the fold. you know, Kent Bazemore is scoring well. Schroeder has seemed to embrace the starting point guard role. Dabo Sefolosha has been – he's like second in the league in steals right now. You know, offensively, they look solid. You know, their pace is pretty good. You know, they know how to speed teams up. But what's your devil's advocate on the Hawks?
Okay, the Hawks played the Kings. They lost to the Lakers. They lost to the Wizards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, they beat the Cavaliers, huge. The Rockets, Bulls, 76ers, Heat, Bucks, and then lost to the Hornets. That's not really a tough schedule.
Well, they were – I'll say this for the Hornets game. They were going to win that game before Dwight Howard elbowed Cody Zeller and got kicked out of the game.
Yeah.
They were on their way to winning that game.
So you know how I feel about the Hornets, and it's one of those – you played really – your one challenge against the Cavaliers, okay, you beat them, and the Bulls are another Jekyll and Hyde team. They can be really on or really off. There's no middle ground for them.
But they are better than they were last year. Now, they're not as good regular season-wise as they were in 2014-15. That's impossible. That team won 60 games. I don't think this Hawks team's going to win 60 games. They're definitely better than they were last season when it felt like a bit of a hangover from that one, and it felt like they were falling back to earth. You know this because you watched them play the Celtics in the playoffs before Al Horford jumped ship over to Boston in free agency. But what do you see different with Dwight Howard there? Or is Dwight Howard at all any different?
No, they're just – They've changed their style to fit him. They're not running traditional Hawks. Let's just all shoot threes because Korver looks a little slower. And really, the one person who's been a surprise there is Hardaway Jr.
Yeah, he's actually sprung up as a spark plug off the bench. He's been much, much better than he was ever with the Knicks or his first season with the Hawks. That's a good point.
Yeah, and you know, he's okay, Atlanta's in second place. Well, we just know Toronto played a back-to-back or 2-3 against...
Yeah, I was going to talk about that right after the Hawks. Yes.
So, yeah, you're second place because the real second place team really just played the conference champions and
yes.
They played them tough. It wasn't, you know, they battled back at the end. They didn't just lose by 40.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's one of those schedule gives you favorable tides right now. It's just the same thing I'm going to say with Charlotte is I will get into their schedule and you'll be like, yeah, there's only so many times you get beat on Brooklyn and Philadelphia before like there's something up here.
I have one for the Hornets, but it's not necessarily regarding their schedule because I do think that the team, you know, we'll still be in disagreement about that probably all the way until the end of the season about the Hornets' legitimacy. But I do have a question about them, but it's not necessarily about them as a team, more about one player. But I wanted to talk about the Raptors, the one that's right behind the Hawks. The Raptors losing back-to-back games on the road against the Cavaliers and then going at home and getting blasted by like 20 or 30 points against the Warriors. For real, the Raptors as a runner-up to Cleveland and Golden State in the rankings, for real or no big deal?
There's still – yeah, it's for real in the East.
So it's not one of those things like, for example, when Cleveland lost to the Spurs and they got blown out by the Golden State Warriors twice and it turned out to be not a big deal because once they got into the playoffs, you know, the Cavaliers started to really show their muscle. Like, do you think the Raptors have that extra gear in the playoffs once they play these type of elite teams?
I think so, because don't forget you're starting a rookie in Pascal Siakam, and Poeltl has been out, I think.
Yeah, he's been in and out of the lineup. That's right.
You know, so they've been relying a lot on Nogueira. So you have, you know, they're only going to get, you know, more experience having played these teams. And plus, also, like I said many times, they're going to be buyers come the trade deadline. They're going to be desperate buyers. They're going to look to upgrade.
They're
going to
need a big man badly. And even when Jared Sullinger comes back from the foot injury, they're still going to need some kind of physical presence there, something. So, yeah, they're going to be trying to take for a center. Maybe Omer Asik, please. Please.
He's getting minutes and he's not looking.
I think that's what it is. I think it's a prop. I think they're just propping him up. It's like, hey, this guy's still here, you know, that kind of a thing. I already heard a rumor. Did you hear the rumor already that Luol Deng is already on the market
for the Lakers? Not surprised because I was very quick to mention that signing made no sense if you have two small forwards.
The quickest free agent signing that turned into a trade was probably Nene when he was with the Nuggets and he got traded to the Wizards. That was probably the quickest one ever. But it was almost like Masai Ujiri signed him knowing he was going to immediately trade him because it was a tradable contract kind of thing, you know. But anyways, for the Raptors, you see the inside woes, that shows in the stats too, because they're like top 10 in steals, but they're like one of the worst teams in the league in blocks. You know, they just don't. I mean, it's not like Biombo was like this all NBA guy, but losing a guy like him and not being able to replace him in the open market was a real concern for them. Even though DeMar DeRozan is averaging 33 points a game, he's the league leader in scoring. He's shooting 50%, which for DeMar DeRozan is unbelievable. You know.
Yeah, their guard play has been great, and it's just they don't have the luxury of being the basically run a small lineup, run a big lineup. They just, here's our pieces. Our pieces fit one-to-one. We lose our rebounding and blocking from Biombo. Well, we could try to, you know, replace that. But like I said, Sidekam's more of a Patrick Patterson replacement.
And they're still going through the Terrence Ross, Norman Powell dilemma because Terrence Ross has suddenly started playing well. If you haven't noticed, he had a game-winning three in one game. He played well in the Cavaliers game that they lost in Cleveland. Powell defensively is probably better, but Ross has got a little bit more punch offensively now.
Yeah, but they're neither of which are have taken sort of the step to become, you know. Well, again, Terrence Ross has been in the league for 5 years now, so
yeah, he was drafted in 2012.
It's about time he does something, and Powell is a second-year guy. He's showing improvement, so that's all you could really sort of hope for is a development of your young guys, because that's the one thing Toronto has sort of lacked is young guys to sort of groom.
Yeah, but the Siakam thing is a red flag. It's not an insult to Pascal Siakam. He's played about as well as he possibly can. So is Jakob Poeltl. But when you're like playing the Warriors, yeah, they're going to go inside and go after you. You know, especially a team that's shooting like 70% from inside the restricted area, which is ridiculous, like the Warriors is, you know.
Exactly, and that's the thing is he's good. He's good as he's, you know, he's exceeded expectations. However, you're just the leaky area, and the ship will still go down because you know you're only as good as him.
So you still kind of like the Raptors to eventually leap Atlanta, kind of go back to where they were in consensus last year, or you think there's still a little bit more speculation there with the Hawks' improvement? The Celtics kind of playing rope-a-dope with Al Horford's concussion. He just came back. They won a game against the Detroit Pistons where Horford played big. So we're not really sure about the Celtics. We're not going to talk about the Celtics much. So you have any kind of two cents there?
The Celtics remind me of the first year when Brad Stevens came in. They had no identity, and they were just sort of mediocre all around. Mm-hmm. Having Horford out for a real long time, and then Jay Crowder was also out too, so your team is just relying on your bench, and we know the bench, any bench sort of lets you down in the end when they have to play extended minutes.
Yeah.
So.
And thanks for the win for the Pelicans, because when that win rolled around, we desperately, desperately needed it. I'll just give you a really quick one here for, you know, the local in me. The Pelicans getting back Drew Holiday to try to get out of the cellar in the West, which is now being incumbented by the Dallas Mavericks. Is that for real or no big deal?
I don't understand that team and what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I see box scores where Buddy Hield plays like 8 minutes. Sheik Diallo has been sent to the D League. And
yes,
you get rid of Lance Stephenson, which was just a total bad PR move. I get it. You have to do it from necessity, but, you know, you didn't win any favors.
Well, he tore his groin. They wanted another guard, and I'm already blanking on who they brought in.
It was Archie Goodwin, huh?
So, yeah, he was like the best cut cut from the 12-man rosters before the season's tipped.
And then you don't play him. He just gets CND.
Yeah, they're still playing a lot of Tim Frazier, even with Langston Galloway, even with Drew Holiday back. So they have won two in a row. They won a game at home. I believe they had back to backs at home. They won the Blazers game, and then they beat the Charlotte Hornets in overtime. You know, now Anthony Davis, my God, I mean, have you seen the numbers for the last 2 weeks? Like he's averaging like I think like 31 and like 12 or something like that.
Yeah, but it's just very strange. You draft Buddy Hield, and you think you'd want those two guys to play together and gather a rapport, but instead, nope, let's just play him on different units.
Yeah.
Strange.
But it is for real that Drew Holiday's pickup, or the return for Drew Holiday from his, you know, his personal problems, has picked up the Hornets to at least be somewhat relevant. Somewhat.
Well, nobody said Drew Holiday's bad.
No, what I'm saying is that Drew Holiday coming back was huge.
Oh, it is huge, but
yeah.
You know, nobody thinks he's a bad player. It's just he's just made of glass.
That's true.
So it's just one of those things where you've created this very fragile team. It's just questionable personnel decisions with New Orleans, I think.
Okay. Now we're going to talk about another series of rookies, and they're all in the same city. The Philadelphia 76ers rookie renaissance. I know they're 3-10. I know they've some ugly ones, but the Philadelphia 76ers and their trio of rookies, one of which is yet to debut.
For real or no big deal. No, there's a trio. They're waiting for a
Ben Simmons.
A quartet.
Well, what's the? You're including Sergio Rodriguez in the mix, is what
he's
I'm guessing.
He's not a rookie. Then Timothy Luwawu.
Caballero? Well, no, I haven't even thought about him.
He's a rookie.
There's no rookie
renaissance. I don't know. It's hard to be a renaissance when you're horrible. You've basically ostracized your former cornerstone to the process in Okafor and Noel. Embiid, yeah, he's doing really good. Saric, you are higher on him than I am.
His numbers have been really good across the board for rookies.
They've been efficient. They haven't been spectacular. He's more polished than the average one and dunner. So,
who, like in a trade, which one would you take? Would you take Embiid with the injury history? Or would you take Saric?
You'd obviously take Embiid because people want the home run, not the safe double. Ground rule double.
What's the chance that we will have 3-6 Philadelphia 76ers in the top three vote getters in the Rookie of the Year race?
1%.
I mean, why? Because of Brandon Ingram, Jaylen Brown?
There's other rookies who are going to step up, and when Simmons comes in, do you think Sarek's going to get his numbers?
Well, this rookie class has been pretty bad. I'll say that. Now, they always look bad the first month, but no one is really stuck out this year. It's really been, in terms of success, like individual dominance, it's really been Saric and Embiid, and then with the assists, it's Rodriguez. So
Rodriguez isn't a rookie, though. Why?
This is his first year in the NBA.
Sergio Rodriguez?
Mm-hmm. We're going to have to look that up again, huh?
I want to say he was in Portland.
That was Rudy Fernandez, right? I think he was drafted by Portland, but
Sergio
he never won.
Rodriguez was in Portland, and he was there with Criapa and Sergi Mania. He's been in the league, and then he got – no. I'm just going to say
you're
you are
just
wrong.
Say that. let me see. Career snapshot. Oh, my God, you're right. He played for Portland, but he played one game in Portland in 06. Wow. 13 for Portland in 2008. Then games started, but he played in 67, 72.
Oh, wait, he's a rookie in your book. You could be around for, just disappear.
I mean, look, good Lord, the last time he played was for Mike D'Antoni in 2009. Now you know why I forgot. You know, I mean, that was eons ago. Mike D'Antoni with the Knicks, that was pre-lockout. So,
Sergio Rodriguez.
Yeah, that was my fault. Sergio Rodriguez is not a rookie, even though he plays like one.
I'm putting a hard sell on your rookie renaissance if your base stat is on
Ben Simmons, I mean, he's one of those guys, let's be serious, when he comes in, it will be a right-away impact. Like, he will probably be
He's going to be a right-away impact, so where's Saric and Embiid and Noel and Okafor going to get minutes?
Oh, where they are, because Ben Simmons is going to play small forward. Goodbye, Nick Stauskas.
Okay, so he's going to play the three, so who's playing the four?
That would be Saric, and Embiid is the five.
And then you have Noel and Okafor, who are going to do what?
Noel is out. He's already got the knee injury, and I think they're going to trade him in February for value. And that's why they traded Jeremy.
But you have no value if you're not playing them.
That's true. I don't know if Noel is in the cards. You know, there's a lot of administrative disagreement there about how to handle Noel. I don't think there's like a total – I don't think they have like a firm idea of what to do with Noel when he comes back from his injury. You know, I don't know if we've even seen him yet. He's still out, correct?
So this is trusting the process, is let's draft these guys and then have to sell them on 50 cents to a dollar because...
Can you sell the process as merchandising for Joel Embiid? He's sort of kind of embraced it on his own. Even when Donald Trump won the presidency, he said, trust the process, you know?
Which was funny, but, you know, he's yeah, as long as he's healthy, he's going to be, you know, we all knew he was a beast in Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
It was just that unfortunate foot injury and major setbacks. And the problem with foot injuries is they always come back again at some point. You just have to figure out when.
And when they it's like Bill Waltonitis. And when it does, I mean, it cripples the player. Like, I mean, you're out for like an entire year with a broken foot for the most
mm-hmm.
part.
And that's why he's had 2 years to learn the regimen and learn the, you know, the nuances of the game that rookies don't have. So he's ahead of the curve, too.
Well, that's the thing. That's why I always say about Blake Griffin. Like, they're like, he's the rookie of the year. I'm like, he wasn't that much of a rookie. He, like, sat the whole previous season to learn how to be an NBA player. Joel Embiid had 2 of those years. So, of course, he's ahead of the curve, you know? Let's transition to another one that's been more of a league-wide thing, that where Joel Embiid, who we just talked about, is in the mix as tops in this category. Three-point shooting big men, the big man shooting epidemic, for real or no big deal?
It's disgusting.
I love it. I love it. You know, if you really feel like you want to expand your game and you can make the threes, make the threes. And Joel Embiid's percentage is actually not bad at all, you know?
Well, that's all he could do. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't practice, you can't run, so just sit and do jump shots, or just sit behind the three-point line. And.
But what about guys like Brook Lopez, who never took threes before Kenny Atkinson got his hands on him? Now Marc Gasol with Dave Fizdale there. Let me give you the top 5 guys in terms of three-pointers made for the center position. Kristaps Porzingis, Brook Lopez, Karl Anthony Towns, Marc Gasol, and Joel Embiid. Outside of Embiid, who's a rookie per se, you know what the other 4 team players have in common?
What?
They all have new head coaches. And what do new head coaches in the NBA want to do? They want to give as much rope to their star bigs as possible. And if they want to shoot threes, they'll let them shoot threes.
Yeah, but the problem is, like, just watching, it's like, you know, Serge Ibaka shooting threes. It's not you're just shooting one or two. I was watching the Pistons Celtics game. You have Al Horford just parked on the line,
Marc Gasol and the Grizzlies. This is an off topic. Do the Grizzlies have the Clippers number? Is there something there that we just don't know about where the Clippers just can't get through Memphis?
Oh, there's just always – every team has their snake to their mongoose.
Yeah, and I was talking about that because Marc Gasol hit a corner three that put the game away. Then he did the Conor McGregor walk, which is pretty funny. But you were talking about Horford with the threes against the Pistons. I mean, what do you think of all that?
And if you're not taking a three, you're taking 2 steps in to shoot a college three. It's like, well, at some point you need rebounding, and the easiest way around that is having a – fast center who's just gonna, you know, dunk it on everybody.
But look at the rebounding versus stretch disparity with the bigs. It's starting to get wider and wider. You could look at guys like Hassan Whiteside, who's averaging 16 rebounds a game. DeAndre Jordan, a true center. You know, Dwight Howard in Atlanta is a great example of where he's basically parked himself in the restricted area to get rebounds and block shots and sort of be the defensive anchor inside for Mike Budenholzer. I'm thinking of other ones. Gorgui Dieng is another one, I believe. Towns is one of the better three-point shooters because he's more of a natural shooter. But most of these guys, these defensive centers, minded centers, it's easier to get shots over them, you know, for the same reason it was against Shaquille O'Neal, because they're not going to leave the paint. So I guess for some of these guys that are not elite defensive rebounding / shot blockers, maybe it's easier to camp out, sneak around, and just pop a three.
Yeah, just pop a three. However, you know, the way to defend them is just they're not going to be defending anybody down low, and everybody wants to go, well, if you're going to shoot threes, we'll start shooting threes, and you're a big old shooter three, our big old shooter three. And it's just, watching it, it's just, it doesn't look, it just looks like a rushed arcade game. Like, oh man, I got to go in 2 minutes. I got to go. Well, I need to finish this game, so let's just shoot threes. And
yeah, and I don't think guard play – people talk about, well, you need general penetration. Well, I don't think good point guard play is necessarily, like, correlated with that. You can get dribble penetration from your small forwards. You can even get it sometimes from your twos on a pump fake. Like, look at Porzingis. His point guard right now is Derrick Rose. He's not exactly sharing the ball. Brook Lopez in Brooklyn, who's he got at point guard? I mean, I don't even know.
Jeremy Lin.
I don't even know. He's injured. So I don't even know who the point guard for Brooklyn right now is. You know, so and then the other one, Karl Anthony Towns, he's had to go between an injured Ricky Rubio and Chris Dunn, who's a rookie. So the only one who's got an elite point guard, you know, in that mix is Gasol with Mike Conley, you know.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, it just seems like, why bother coaching anymore? Let's just all run down and shoot a quick three.
Okay, let's talk about just kind of some quickies as we're kind of closing things out here. The player rest epidemic that's already kicked in really early in the season, for real or no big deal?
It's for real.
But it's no big deal.
It is no big deal. It's just... It could just be me, but I seem like, or maybe I'm just noticing it because of the rest. There's a lot of just random back-to-back super early in the season.
Yeah, a lot of people have been doing back-to-back, specifically home to road. You know, like instead of home stands with back-to-backs, a lot of teams have been having to go travel the day after they play a home game.
So I don't
sometimes on national television. So
it doesn't make sense why they're scheduling all these back-to-backs so early. Or, like I said, it could have just been always there, and I didn't really pay attention to it.
I think that is a little earlier, but have you heard the report that in the new CBA, one of the things that they might put in there is that they're going to start the regular season early to prevent more back-to-backs?
Oh, they should.
Have a shorter preseason?
They should. And I think, I don't know, they're doing more back-to-backs. I think they want to get rid of 4 and 5s or something. It's like, well, if we just do back-to-back, we'll give you 3 days off. And
Well, remember, too, one of the other big deals was that, you know, in the last 2 years when Adam Silver took over was to give them a legitimate, week off during the All-Star break. Or at least, like, yeah, it is a week because it goes Tuesday to Tuesday, if I'm correct. So, like, you literally, instead of having teams play on Thursdays and then go Friday, trip on over to the All-Star game, now you literally get an entire week of a break. And, you know, that caused a lot of teams to have to do more back-to-backs before the All-Star break, you know, and then go into their regular schedule after the All-Star break. But I guess rest is a big deal for them. But basically, they're sort of buying time for some of their superstars. You know, LeBron James sat out right after they beat the Raptors in that really good game that they had. And then the Pacers blew out the Cavs without LeBron. The Grizzlies, you remember that game early in the season where they sat everybody and the Timberwolves blew them out? Paul George sat a couple of games. Anthony Davis, in the middle of their 0-for losing streak, sat out. You know, I'm trying to remember a couple of others, but you probably know more than me. The only legitimate and the funny thing is, none of them are legitimate injuries. Everybody is fully healthy except for in the superstar pile, except for Al Horford, who got the concussion. You know,
yeah, and they just kept him out extra long because, well, you know, why not? We'll be safe. And
so they kind of rested him too. You know,
and the only, you know, Adam Silver response is, well, I wish teams would rest their guys at home as opposed to the road because,
well,
it hurts.
Ticket sales. Yeah, it hurts ticket sales because fans of even of home teams, when they see the visiting team, they want to see the visiting team star player. You know, it's a star driven league. It's just the way it is. So when they don't play, the only caveat is, well, your home team has a better chance of winning. You know, so you have the experience of watching your home team win. Would you rather your home team win with the star player sitting, or would you rather see the star player play, but a higher potential that the home team loses?
I would say now I want the star players, but it depends. It's just one of those. Like when I was young, like, oh, the first game I wanted to see was always, you know, the
Bulls game.
Was always just a blowout. Was like, you know, the exhibition, like in college. Like, oh, I want to go see, you know, who they play. Oh, let's go see him against, like, Fairfield or, you know, like a nobody. I'm like, oh, I want to see him, you know, I want to see him win and do good. Then eventually, cool, yeah, now I need to see the star players. You know, so it'd be, you know, it's nice to see, oh, I'd like to see Jaylen Brown get minutes. I'd like to see, you know, you'd like to see Buddy Hield get more than 10 minutes playing. Yeah, so, okay, I'd like to see them beat on Philly as opposed to, well, it's better than them getting destroyed and looking demoralized and terrible against a good team.
Let me just hit on a couple of these here. The Utah Jazz's offensive struggles. They're the slowest team in the league, so it kind of messes with their offensive rating a little bit. But offensive rating-wise, they've still been really bad. They had some horrible, horrible scoring outings on national television. For real or no big deal?
They're just finding their identity, and with your cornerstone out, it's Yeah, it's just, it's no big deal.
Okay. The Knicks and the Pacers' defensive struggles.
Knicks is for real, but expected. You trade away Brooke Lopez and...
Robin Lopez.
You trade away poor man's Brooke Lopez.
Sideshow Bob, yeah.
And you get Noah, who, like I said, doesn't look healthy, so that's legit. Who was the other team you mentioned?
Oh, the Indiana Pacers have just...
Indiana Pacers, I can't figure out. They just look terrible on
offensively,
defense.
They look fantastic. You know, Jeff Teague seems comfortable scoring as the lead guard there. Thaddeus Young is kind of finding his way at the four. Miles Turner looks good, even though that first game of the season turned out to be a little bit of a red herring. And then Paul George has had a little bit of issues, I think, with the ankle maybe. I can't remember exactly what his issue was, but he sat a couple of games. But, defensively, they look awful under Nate McMillan. I mean, they've just not gotten anybody to make stops.
Yeah, and that's like, it's just really surprising how terrible they are.
Yeah, I don't think they're god-awful yet, but defensively, that has got to change. The Portland Trailblazers' streakiness, you know, they're last in defensive rating. Al-Farouq Aminu suffered an injury, and he's been out, and they have been awful since Aminu went down. For real or no big deal?
No big deal, because I am now buying into the claim that they signed all these deals to be the marketplace. Because, you know, you give all this money to Crabbe and Evan Turner and Mo Harkless, who are sort of the same type player.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing that because you want them to be one of them to be traded. So we have the money. Let's get people. And here's, hey, you want assets? We'll give you, instead of giving you draft picks and change the tire, we'll give you a legit player who's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they're still going to have to eat the tax if they match salaries instead of.
Yeah, but you're going to have an all-star, a better player in return.
Yeah,
just keeping that roster.
As long as it works out with Lillard and McCollum, because.
You have Lillard and McCollum, no backups for them, really.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
Tim Quarterman.
Yeah, Tim Quarterman has been playing. Yeah, it's weird.
Tim Quarterman, NBA player. It's official. You never thought it would happen. And...
No, I thought it was a nightmare. It's a nightmare come true. Everybody talked about the nightmare come true for the last 2 weeks. No, my nightmare come true is that Tim Quarterman is in the NBA.
And we had just mentioned, like, yeah, their team is just – you're not going to – Leonard's not going to scare anybody. Vonleh's proven he still hasn't turned that corner. You're playing Aminu at the four, and he's sort of undersized for
that.
So
what is up with Myers Leonard's hair, the man bun? That is weird looking. He did have that one game. Didn't you remember he had that one game where he really played well? I can't. It was an overtime game, but I cannot remember. I want to say it was the Sacramento Kings. But, you know, the Kings have had their own problems. But, you know, Leonard's not terrible, but he's Myers Leonard. You know what I'm saying?
He's really not – he's not that good, and he's not ever going to be really that good. Yeah. And Myles Leonard is just like, you know, Tyler Zeller. It's like, well, he's serviceable. He'll give you – but he's not going to turn that corner, I don't think.
The James Harden, Russell Westbrook, because this was a storyline when they had played each other on ESPN on Wednesday about, you know, their journeys and how they sort of correlate because of them being on their own now. The James Harden, Russell Westbrook, can you top this series of performances? Is that for real or is that no big deal? Like, and I say that in this way. Do you think that there really is some sort of like stat gazing between the two of I want to show that I can do more for my team than the other guy can, or do you think that it's not a big deal and they're both in different situations?
They're both in different situations. I would say one might be looking more than the other.
Okay.
But it seems that's just an ESPN storyline thing, because Westbrook always had, remember when Durant was out for the year, he was putting up those same triple doubles, the third one usually being turnovers.
Yeah.
And Harden is just a me first player where the ball, it's about me. So his triple doubles, you know, with the turnovers as well.
Yes.
That's just, it's the same thing. The stats are the same, but the story is different. Westbrook is just, it's me versus the world. Harden is just, well, it's just me. I'm the best, you know, it's my team.
Can Westbrook average that triple-double? I don't think he can get to 10 rebounds or more a game. I don't think it's possible.
No, Westbrook also... He has to learn. Well, he's also developing these new different players. Oladipo and Sabonis you have now.
Yeah.
You can't do what you've been doing with that same
lineup.
They
brought in Laverne. They brought in Jeremy Grant, trying to figure that out too. Yeah.
Whereas Harden is just like, yeah, I don't care. You're going to pass me the ball because I'm the star.
Mm-hmm. Anything different from the Thunder so far? I mean, they are 8-5 right now, which we sort of expected. We knew they would be a very – them being streaky is no shock. I mean, it just isn't. I knew that it would be that way for the Thunder. But is there – what do you see different out of the Thunder with Westbrook leading the way with Durant out of the picture?
I don't see how Sabonis and Roberson will fit. One of those two sort of have to be moved out of that lineup. I don't know who can replace them. But you can't really have two sort of defensive guys who aren't providing anything. You can't just have Oladipo and Westbrook be the scoring on the team.
Yeah, it's sort of the same thing as like we've always talked about with the Clippers at the small forward position. And we were just talking about another one where, the Raptors at the center position, where if you have that super duper weak link type of starter, then it's like a red flag for teams to go after you, you know, and that's what's going to be happening with the team that with Sabonis with the Thunder. So the Lakers having a winning record at all under Luke Walton, second in the league in scoring. D'Angelo Russell's looked really good. Julius Randle has improved vastly. Is this for real or no big deal?
It is a good storyline. I don't think it's any big deal because eventually they're going to come crashing down, I think, as, you know, rookies hit the wall and you know, fatigue starts to wear on people. But I, as much as I don't like the Lakers and that, you always want them to do good. You don't want to see a sad team like Philadelphia, like, oh, well, you know, they're terrible. There's no point of watching. You want to hate them. You want to love to hate them. That's the same thing with Duke. Remember that one year Duke was like they were under 500?
Yes.
It was just completely irrelevant. It's like, well, I'm not going to get excited that somebody's playing Duke and, oh,
well,
gonna...
it's kind of like the Heat this year, you know, or maybe the Heat after LeBron left. It was like, well, I hate the Heat because LeBron's there. Then LeBron left and they missed the playoffs. And it's like, no, I'm not happy the Heat missed the playoffs. I want them to do well. You know,
the problem with the Heat is their fan base doesn't care. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, well, if they don't care, why should I care?
The Heat are about right on line with what you predicted. Defensively, they're very strong. Hassan Whiteside looks great. Outside of that, no one's been able to step up. Tyler Johnson and Justice Winslow are kind of the same play they were as rookies or as, you know, from last season. And they've just struggled to scratch out wins because they can't score. That's basically the Heat.
Well, Deion Waiters still looks terrible. And
yeah.
Goran Dragic does not look like an elite point guard.
He started out hot early, and now he's really cooled off. And, you know, I think he had one game that he sat.
Being hot and being really good are two separate things.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can get in a hot streak, but he doesn't look like, oh, yeah, he's a top five guy.
Didn't Emmanuel Mudiay just have a game against the Celtics where he scored 25 points in a quarter?
25 points in a quarter, yep. And so you can get, anybody could get high, anybody can have a really good game. It's just, like, he essentially was the crippling thing to that franchise because they signed him, you know, he was, what, 20 million?
Okay. Andrew Wiggins with the 47-point game against the Lakers and the creeping up in the 25-point-per-game average over Karl-Anthony Towns. The Wiggins-Towns dynamic with, like, a very small Durant-Westbrook tent. Is that for real or no big deal?
That's no big deal because you're comparing apples to oranges and you're just going, well, they're both fruit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or you're comparing two guards.
But you don't see a situation here where it might turn into something toxic down the road, is what I'm saying. Because this is where the seed gets planted early, early, early in the process under Tom Thibodeau.
No, I don't think... I don't see why there would be one.
Okay.
Because they're both, you know, they're different.
That's purely speculative. It's not something that I'm buying into either. It's just something that I've just noticed that Wiggins is sort of kind of fighting back as the top scorer on the team again. You know, there's just always – I don't know if it's push and pull or whether they're both embracing that production. So it's like, hey, if that guy's doing better, it's good for all of us. You know what I'm saying?
That's why I think they're both embracing it, because one is a center and one is a small forward slash shooting guard, depending upon
the Timberwolves. Even with Zach LaVine playing better, the Timberwolves are still a project. I've seen a couple of their games. They did blow out the Sixers on TNT, which was their first like national primetime game. They only had one last year, and that was a blowout loss to the Warriors where Curry scored 50. But this was their first like national primetime win in a long time. So you could tell that the Wolves are getting better. They're getting a lot more of a spotlight from the national providers, but I still don't see it. There's a little bit of still growing pains there defensively. They're trying to play slower, but offensively they haven't gotten
better.
Well,
they look in the third quarter, they just fall apart.
Yeah, it's just they've had some awful third quarters, that's true. And I just don't see it there with a playoff team. They would basically need the Lakers to kind of fall back to earth really quickly, and they would need one of those other West teams to between Houston, Memphis, and maybe Portland to just totally fall apart in order to get a playoff spot. I don't think they got enough room.
No, they're still trying to mold their pieces, because as good as LaVine is, and Rubio and Chris Dunn and Tyus Jones,
it's a talented team for sure. You know,
you just don't have, you know, again, as always comes down to is, well, we don't have a set anything. There's no, mm-hmm. the whole bench is just young players who are just athletic but don't know what to do.
Okay, you saw them. I don't know if you saw them live. I'm pretty sure you saw them real time on television. As they play the Boston Celtics on ESPN. Give me your take, somewhat warm take on the Golden State Warriors.
They are going to be in trouble come playoff time.
Okay, what was your concerns watching them?
Zaza Pachulia is done.
Okay. Now the Celtics did get blown out in this game, I have to say.
Yeah, and they also didn't have two of their starters.
Mm-hmm.
And just watching it was, okay, they held with them for, you know, one quarter, then that was it. Then it just fell apart. But that was expected. And then, really, Draymond Green is sort of trying to become the villain of the NBA.
Yeah, I think he's just going out of his way. Like, there was a quote where they had a close game against the Bucks, and there was some history here because the Bucks had ended their undefeated record. They were the first team to beat them last season, and then they had a really close game in Oracle at when the Milwaukee Bucks had to return the road trip. And I remember OJ Mayo and Draymond got into it at the very end of the game because it was a close game. And I feel like there's a little bit of animosity there between the Bucks and the Warriors, because the Bucks were sort of like really celebratory about ending the undefeated record. And Draymond went out and basically was mad that they were targeting his guard, the guy he was guarding on the last possession, to try to get a stop. And Draymond, he got a deflection, which, well, Klay Thompson picked up, but Green basically said he was upset that they went after him. Which,
yeah,
is...
he says that then, you know, he had a completely horrible playoffs with just, you know, dirty tactics, and then I think at some point he just said, you know what, screw it, I'll just be the villain.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's sort of trying to embrace it. Or maybe he's doing it, you know, it's almost like pro wrestling. We're going back to pro wrestling. It's almost like even like with Pence, like with Mike Pence, where it's like he's trying to, you need somebody to sort of rub it off, you know, and so that the other guy doesn't get, so that some of the hate can be deflected away. I think that's what he's doing with Durant. He's trying to deflect the hate away from Durant, who got a mountain of boos, surprisingly, from TD Garden.
Well, Durant's also not doing himself any favors.
Well, here's what I was saying is that, you know, I didn't think the Celtics would be – I don't understand being angry at a player for not choosing to sign with them when he didn't play there in the first place.
Sports fans are very fickle and very self-centered. That's a
– Like Oklahoma City booing him out of the building, I totally understand. But the Celtics and the – like the Clippers booing him out, like that doesn't make sense to me. You know?
Well, there's that – like, you know, his comments aren't just very endearing to anything. He's like, I have no attachment to you. Why are you guys bothering? It's just the, you know, the screw you chip on the shoulder. It's like, well, you shouldn't have one. You're, you know.
Yeah, he's very impersonal in interviews for the last. I remember watching him on that show that got canceled with Bill Simmons on HBO, Any Given Wednesday. And I remember he was very, very cold with Simmons in the interview. He was there with him. It was him and Nas in the same interview, and he was just very, very cold. I remember thinking, man, he's like, he's got a chip on his shoulder. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and it's like, well, why do you have a chip on the shoulder? You're a top five player in the top three player
you've
in the league.
You've won like two Olympic gold medals. You're like the you've won three or four scoring titles. You don't have to prove anything. He feels like he has to prove that he can be a team player.
And it's just again the difference. Dwayne Wade signed elsewhere. Durant signed elsewhere. Wade, very gracious, very classy. Everybody loves him, you know, even elsewhere, you know. Oh, thank you. No, hey, Durant's like, yeah, screw all you guys. And they're like, well, you know, screw you too.
What do you think of Wade's new nickname, Father Prime? You know, now that he's like picking up the 3-point shooting. He is the guard version of Tim Duncan. I figured this out. Every time you think he's slipping, he's not. Because even though his points are going down, his efficiency is the same. There will be a season eventually where he just can't play anymore. He realizes it himself and he retires. But Wade is still a really good guard in the NBA.
Oh yeah, he is, but he knows he's not the superstar and he's doesn't have the ego where he says, I'm still going to keep everybody back. He's now deferring. And the same way Vince Carter. And eventually, you know, in a year or two, you're going to see Dwayne Wade come off the bench. And, you know, it's one of those, well, I'm going to do good for the team. It's just, you know, you can't really say many bad things about Dwayne Wade.
Did you see this? The play? I don't know if you saw the same highlight, but there was a highlight where the Grizzlies were closing out a game and they left Vince Carter open baseline and he went in for a jam. I am shocked at 39 he can still get up like that. That is amazing. That's one of the most sneaky, amazing things we've ever seen out of any NBA player, that Vince Carter is still an elite dunker at age 39.
Yeah, and then probably after that game, he sat in the ice tub for like 2 hours.
This will probably be his last year, but he's still fairly effective for the Grizzlies. He's embraced that role, just like Wade has sort of embraced the role as being kind of, I don't want to say the sidekick to Jimmy Butler, even though he played sidekick to LeBron, but he kind of, it feels like he's more complimentary to him than he is sort of domineering. The 3-pointers going up for Dwayne Wade has been a little bit weird. I don't really understand that because the Bulls are not a great 3-point shooting team, so maybe Wade is overcompensating by feeling like he has to be the one to take the threes, but just a kind of a weird scenario. But yeah, back to the Warriors. You know, there is a weird dynamic there between Curry and Durant. We've seen Curry go off in some games. We've seen Durant have some really good games. One in particular he just had against the Bucks where he had like 25 points in the first half. But I don't know. Do you feel like he's trying to force the issue with whose team it is? And I want to share the ball with Curry and Clay. And it feels a little forced.
It feels like a team that was just assembled. Like there seems to be there's no real heart to that team.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, we're all professionals. Let's all get done. It's no like, oh yeah, we're a team. We got each other. It's just like, yeah, we're going to go, I'll do my thing. Let's all go win. And then we all go home.
And they're villainous, but they're not, it's not Heat. I mean, it's not Miami Heat level. It's not like the Heatles was like, people hated that team and they hated the way they played because they were so athletic. And when they would run out on guys and dunk on them, and LeBron is a superstar and he, you know, he has no problem expressing his emotion. Whereas with the Warriors, they're not terribly cocky this year. You know,
problem is you can't be a villain if people like Steph Curry and Klay Thompson.
Like, do you remember at any point in the Celtics game where the Warriors seemed to be rubbing it in on him? I don't really remember that. You know, I just remember them kind of like methodically taking them out of the game with their offense. And then by the fourth quarter, the game was over.
Yeah. Like I said, it just seems to be no emotion to it. It's like they're just doing it.
Yeah,
and then
I agree with that.
We're being paid to beat you, so we're going to go do it.
Yeah. But I feel like they have to tap into that in order to beat the really, really good teams. Like,
oh, like the playoffs, it's going to change when, you know, David West just looks done. The only good real sign of the bench has been Patrick McCaw, who's, you know, comes down to just which where you're drafted.
Yeah, and Livingston's still playing well. You know, I think they missed Bogut.
he's playing well, but he's playing as expected. He's not going to be a difference maker. No one of the, you know, Iguodala, he's, you know, pretty much playing the majority of the minutes anyways because you have to get Pachulia out really quick.
Yeah. And I promise this is the last one because it's a small takeaway before I hit the schedule and then we get out of here. Dallas Mavericks in the bottom of the West cellar. For real, no big deal.
Well, A, it's for real, because this is what happens when you don't have young players. You just keep getting, you know, veterans to try to stay up top when Dirk goes out. And then with Dirk out, there's been nobody really to replace him.
Well, J.J. Barea's injury was huge. Now they have no guards. You know?
And now you're playing Seth Curry as your starting.
And Jonathan Gibson, who played in China last year, you know.
Yeah, though, if that's your starting backcourt, that's not a good sign. But Harrison Barnes, I think, he's top 15 in scoring.
Yeah, he had a career high against the Bucks, which they won in overtime. The Bucks are weird. We didn't even have time to talk about them today, but they're just weird. But yeah, for the Dallas Mavericks, it's been an odd stretch for them, for sure. It's been an odd stretch.
The one thing about, you know, this is for a future episode, just planting a little seed in your head. Do you know Harrison Barnes was the high school player of the year, Mr. NBA?
He played in Ames, Iowa with Doug McDermott.
Yeah, best high school kid in the country.
Yeah, he was the number one player. He was like this top recruit going into North Carolina. And even though he didn't really match what he was expected to do in North Carolina, a lot of people were high on him. Like, they thought he was going to be a superstar. You know where he actually kind of got his reputation back going into the draft? It was the combine, because his athletic stuff was really good. And remember, that was the year where the Warriors were desperately trying to hang on to their draft pick. So they tanked at the end of the season and shut down their starters so that they could lose games down the stretch and keep their draft pick. And that's when they booed they were retiring Chris Mullin's number, and they booed them. They booed the crowd booed it because they were so mad that the owner was purposely tanking games. But they kept the draft pick and they kept Barnes.
Yeah, and you know, hasn't flourished. This might be the year he finally flourishes.
Well, that's the funny part. And that's why I mentioned Bogut. That, you know, Bogut's playing well with Dallas, but the Dallas Mavericks are fucking terrible. You know, it's like, you know, I mean, can you say, is it fair to say that the Warriors won that end of the deal, or is it just way too early to say something like that? Because Barnes is still playing okay, you know?
No, Golden State did not win that deal yet, because all it did was allow them to have space to get Durant. It wasn't a trade. You know, Pachulia doesn't look any better, and in fact, Dirk's out. So Dirk is really the cornerstone of your team and just sort of the heart of your team. They're playing.
If a 38-year-old man is the cornerstone of your team, you're in trouble. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know, but he's one of those guys.
We saw this in L.A. They finally cut the cord, and now they're winning again.
So in L.A., the same thing in San Antonio. It's just one of those, well, if that's the heart of your team, and they all rally around him, mm-hmm. whether or not he has the talent anymore, it's just...
The Spurs are just the Spurs. Like, it's funny, because we always say it, but even without Duncan, people would think, oh, there's going to be a little bit of spice here, because it's going to be a new take. But it's not. It's the Spurs. You know, it's just the Spurs again. Let me just kind of hit on some games here. Just, you know, we got the Warriors. They're going to be going to Indiana on Monday. Do you see anything? I do see one really nice one. Toronto's got to go to L.A. to play the Clippers.
No, Toronto's just going to get beat down early now.
Uh-huh. Here's the last time the Lakers played the Thunder, Russell Westbrook had a crazy game. It was a fun up and down game. Now the Thunder have to go to the LA to play the Lakers on Tuesday. ESPN, you got the Spurs and the Hornets, your favorite team. And then the Timberwolves are going to be on ESPN. They go to New Orleans to play the Pelicans. Oh, what did we do to deserve this? And there are obviously because of the fact that it's Thanksgiving, I don't believe there's going to be any.
Well, let's just all give thanks.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's ever been a Thanksgiving night game. When did they stop playing Thanksgiving games in the NBA? See, I do remember some every now and then.
Well, when they gave it to they let the NFL have Thanksgiving. There's no point of dragging people out if it's going to be, you know, Cowboys and.
Yeah, and it's the same thing with Christmas. Like, I'm pretty sure if you look at the NFL schedule coming up, Christmas this year is a Sunday. Well, NBA owns Christmas. That's their day. You know, that's when they did – when the lockout ended, they used Christmas Day as their tip-off day. So the NFL moved – like, if you look at their schedule, all of their day games are, like, on Christmas Eve or the Friday before. You know?
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's also a nice sign. They do it for hockey too, and they do it for all the other sports. You know, it's one of those goodwill gestures of, we're not competing with each other. Let's, you know, you can have your day, we'll have ours, and I think it's nice. Plus, the NFL is killing itself left and right.
The Warriors played the Minnesota Timberwolves on Saturday in a late league pass showing. I might check that out just because the Warriors and the Wolves. Well, didn't the Wolves beat the Warriors last year in Golden State? They were one of the only teams that beat them there. So there might be a little bit of a revenge factor there. I mean,
I don't know. It's all the preseason of the regular season. Don't get too sell it. Just don't get too worked up by it. Just enjoy it.
It's hard to, especially when you're not in the ABC schedule and they start firing out those really good, sexy, big team versus big team matchups. So, but on behalf of Matt Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Take care, everybody. Thanks a lot.